The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, March 10th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here. We got all sorts of great stuff coming up for you this week on 420 Radio, and I can't wait to bring it to you. Coming this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I'll be traveling up to Seattle, Washington for the Marijuana Business Trade Show being sponsored by Magical Butter up there at Magical Butter Studios. So this weekend, we'll be collecting all sorts of interviews with vendors and business people in the cannabis industry. Bring them back to you for next week's show. So stay tuned for that. All right, on today's show, it's Monday. So as usual on Mondays, we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our cannabis Q&A. You can ask any question you like on cannabis science, culture, history, and health by calling our live phone line at 971-533-7111 or joining our live chat room through Ustream. You can ask your questions, and we'll be talking to Dr. Mitch at half past the hour. Also on today's show, we'll have time for a radical rant. I'm going to expand some more on something I've been writing about all weekend long, and that is the dilemma going on with medical marijuana in Washington State and my refusal to accept the blame from the medical advocates who are claiming legalization is to blame for this. I'm going to show you what's really to blame for the situation in Washington State. That's coming up in the Radical Rant. Also, in behind the headlines, we'll have some time to take a look at the state of Florida, where even more polls are coming out showing massive support for the medical marijuana amendment, including in state GOP districts. Republican districts are overwhelmingly in support of medical marijuana. We'll get to that in behind the headlines. Also on today's show, we've got Roots Monday for our daily Toker Tunes. Bacon Dan will be calling in. He's got some music for us, some classic rock from Harry Nilsson, so get ready for that at 20 after. But as always, we will start the show with our 420 Radio News with all the latest headlines in the cannabis community, including the California State Democratic Party embracing legalization. We've got Washington State passing a new bill for medical marijuana limits. We've got California's cops and cities finally coming around on dispensary regulation. We've got a test out of Denver showing inaccuracies in THC labeling for medibles. And also in Colorado, we'll take a look at what's happening to the medical marijuana registry since the passage of Amendment 64. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. Stick around, and thanks for joining us.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the best way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. 420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com. or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, March 10th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. The California State Democratic Party has adopted marijuana legalization into their official party platform. On a unanimous vote, the state Democrats, quote, support the legalization, regulation, and taxation of marijuana in a manner similar to that of tobacco or alcohol, end quote. Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom noted how California led the way on medical marijuana in 1996, but has fallen behind Washington and Colorado on marijuana legalization. Quote, "This is not a debate about stoners," said Newsom. "You can be pro-regulation without being an advocate for drug use," end quote. The United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents over 1,000 medical marijuana workers, lobbied the Democrats for the inclusion. UFCW's executive director for the Western States Council explained, quote, "This industry is here, so it is now time to legalize it and regulate it," end quote. While the Marijuana Control Regulation and Legalization Act technically has until next month to submit signatures for the ballot, it looks like legalization will not be voted on by Californians until 2016 at the earliest. Washington State Senate has passed a bill to reconcile medical marijuana with the state's new recreational marijuana system. SB 5887 will redefine medical possession limits from 24 ounces of usable marijuana to 21 grams of concentrate, 3 ounces of usable marijuana, 3 pounds of medibles, and 6.75 quarts of tincture. However, a doctor may recommend greater limits if a patient requires. Patients will be allowed to cultivate 3 mature and 3 immature plants, but again, a doctor can recommend an amount up to the current 15 plants. Collective Gardens would be downsized from 10 patients and 45 plants to 4 patients and their combined limit. For the first time, a mandatory patient registry will be established to protect patients from arrest. The registry contains the tightest privacy controls of any medical marijuana state. Patients would still be allowed to shop the current loophole dispensaries until September of 2015 and will be exempt from all retail taxes, but still will face the grower and processor taxes included in the price. Fearing the popularity of legalization, police groups in California have finally proposed legislation to regulate medical marijuana dispensaries. Senator Lou Correa has introduced SB 1262, sponsored by the California Police Chiefs Association and the League of California Cities, two groups that have previously opposed any efforts to regulate medical marijuana. Quote, over 90% of the chiefs felt that, regardless of how you felt about the marijuana issue itself, there needed to be a responsible public safety approach to this, end quote, said the president of the Chiefs Association, Covina Police Chief Kim Rainey. Now the groups fear if they don't advance a proposal more to their liking, advocates will succeed in passing something they don't like. We thought it was unwise to purely play defense, said League of California Cities lobbyist Tim Cromartie. Quote, we thought we needed to play offense, end quote. SB 1262 would require dispensaries to have local licenses and create stricter controls on how doctors can recommend medical marijuana. Testing of medical marijuana-infused edibles in Colorado by the Denver Post has revealed wildly inaccurate and variable dosages of the product. Steep Hill Halant, a state-licensed lab, found products listed at 100 milligrams of THC per serving to have levels as high as 160 milligrams and as low as 17 milligrams for the majority of products tested. One manufacturer, Dr. J's, was found to have next to no THC in their products, with readings of 0.2 milligrams, 0.3 milligrams, 0.5 milligrams, and 5 milligrams on four different 100 milligram labeled products. A spokesman suggested it may have been a bad batch, but with the two less than half milligram products purchased 2 months, 40 miles, and 282 batches apart from each other, that seems unlikely. Numerous dispensaries have dropped Dr. J's products, including Botanicare, which fielded over 450 complaints about lack of effect, and the Marijuana Enforcement Division is investigating. Medical marijuana enrollment in Colorado has become stagnant since the legalization of recreational marijuana. The state data shows 111,030 medical marijuana patients registered as of January 2013. In November 2012, there were 106,000 red card holders. Since 2009, the lowest number of patients was just under 6,000 and the greatest just over 128,000. Enrollment increased 950% in 2009, 124% in 2010, and 28% in 2012, while growth in 2013 was just over 2%. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, March 10th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Get your transcript of 420 Radio News at 420radio.org. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines and take a look at the popularity of the medical marijuana amendment in Florida among GOP Senate districts. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. Let him bring in the beat. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. Let them bring in the beat.
Street.
Four 20 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Check out our morning lineup every weekday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. On Monday, it's Drug Truth Network Cultural Baggage with Dean Becker from Houston, Texas. On Tuesdays, Drug Policy Facts with Doug McVeigh from Portland, Oregon. On Wednesdays, Professionals Against Prohibition with Jen Jackson from Raleigh, North Carolina. On Thursdays, Cannabis Network Radio with David Kowalski from Tampa, Florida. And on Fridays, Canna Truths with Denton Ramsey from Waco, Texas. That's 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and 4 p.m. GMT right here on 420radio.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines and the prospects for legalization of medical marijuana in Florida via a constitutional amendment got a whole lot brighter this weekend as the Miami Herald released results of an internal Republican poll on the issue. According to the poll, 78% of voters in Florida's Republican state Senate districts favored the initiative. News of the enormous support for medical marijuana among Republicans has the state GOP strategists and Florida-based anti-drug coalitions scrambling. Poll after poll has found more support for medical marijuana than the 60% vote it would require to be added to the Florida Constitution. From the lowest poll, 62% that I found from public policy polling, to the highest poll, 82% that I found from Quinnipiac University. Now, fighting medical marijuana is going to be pretty difficult for these Florida-based anti-drug groups. They're based in St. Petersburg, Florida, and they're called the Drug-Free America Foundation and Save Our Society from Drugs. Now, the Drug-Free America Foundation was founded by Mel and Betty Sembler, Republican fundraisers who were big supporters of George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush. Both of those presidents appointed Mel Sembler to ambassadorship positions. Those two originally founded Straight Inc. Straight Inc. was a boot camp for young people with drug problems that was convicted of false imprisonment of one patient and paid over $700,000 in damages for assaulting and mistreating another patient. Straight Inc. is now the Drug-Free America Foundation. And while they don't run any boot camps anymore, they're still run by the same people. Also, Betty Sembler is on the board of Save Our Society from Drugs, but you'll know them best by their executive director, Calvina Fay. You remember Calvina Fay? She's the type who likes to spout anti-medical marijuana lines like, quote, smoking crack cocaine makes you feel good too, but we don't call it medicine, end quote. Well, the difficulty for them, aside from the supermajority poll numbers against them, is going to be trying to get any sort of TV commercials on the air to fight medical marijuana. This year, incumbent Republican Governor Rick Scott is expected to spend $100 million on campaign TV ads, and his opponent, former Republican Governor and now Democrat Charlie Crist, will spend another $50 million. With all of this ad money going toward these ads, it's going to make it much tougher and much more expensive for them to run any ads having to do with anything else. Plus, keep in mind that John Morgan, the Orlando attorney who spent $4 million of his own money to get the amendment on the ballot, he already has $20 million set aside for his law firm's ad buys, and he's expected to use some or all of that to help promote the medical marijuana amendment. Many people in Florida believe he's behind the medical marijuana amendment to bring more younger Democratic voters to the polls in order to get his employee, Charlie Crist, elected as governor. So in that media buy environment, it's going to be really tough for the drug warriors to get a hold of any ad space. And even if they do, it's going to be really, really expensive. Now, if they want to defeat medical marijuana, their only hope really is to try to paint its language that contains the clause, other diseases and conditions when recommended by a physician. They'll have to try to convince voters that's a gateway to California-style quasi-legalized medical marijuana. And Florida voters are currently split on the idea of outright legalization. About 48% support outright legalization and about another 48% oppose it. And as far as the ad buy cost, it's going to cost about $4 million a week to put a commercial on enough TV sets enough times in Florida to be able to reach the voters they need. And even then, one poll that asked the voters about the specific language of the amendment, including the other conditions language, that poll came out at 70% support. So folks, we may finally see a state lead us out of the Box Canyon. God, I hope so. Woo, it's Monday. How you feeling?
I'm around.
I think we could feel better.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's see what we can do about that.
Yeah.
Be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420.
In the afternoon, if I'm home, I smoke marijuana.
You're listening to Radical RUSS. On the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, marijuana. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I got my ganja.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. And we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together. So let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Welcome back, everybody. Who's hungry for bacon? We're all hungry for bacon. We got Bacon Dan on the line. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good, Russ. A little under the weather due to standing in the rain all game during the Timbers home opener this past Saturday. But all in all, I can't complain.
Didn't we get a 1-1 draw out of that game?
We did, and it was literally at the last second of a game. They headbutted it in, and it was well worth getting downpoured on. And ended up going home sick from work yesterday. So spent the day just recovering. So back at it today, and I'm on that note, have I ever got a great song for you today.
All right. Yeah, looking forward to this. One of my favorite artists.
Yeah, it's actually, this is coming courtesy of having really cool parents growing up who always wanted to raise me on good music. So today we've got Harry Nilsson, Jump Into the Fire, off of his 1971 Nilsson Schmilsson album, which I think is just a great name for an album. This is just a great song. Harry Nilsson, of course, had a lot of success, regardless of the fact he never actually toured or headlined any sort of festival. His music was just good. I actually sang this song the other week at Karaoke from Hell, and they even put the echo on the chorus part, so it was pretty spot on. It was really fun.
Well, what fun, man. Harry Nilsson, Jump Into the Fire is our song for today, and Bacon Dan, thanks for so much for bringing this great music to us.
Oh, thank you, Russ.
All right, get well soon. We'll see you.
Sounds good.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420.
Here's don't you come to my world. You're packing by the sand. Or take me by the hand and lead me up.
listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Weed Porn Daily with Oscar Diaz from Florida every Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and 7 p.m. GMT right here on 420radio.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Half past on a Monday means it's time for our visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You got to visit the doctor. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Superb.
Glad to hear it, my man. All right. So I want to remind everyone, we're taking your live questions on our phone line at 971-533-7111. Or you can get him into our chat room on Ustream. Just visit the chat room, type /login, create yourself an account, and you can ask your live questions. Before we get to the questions, we always give Dr. Mitch the first word to tell us what's latest in the world of cannabis science.
Got some great news yesterday. Study on PTSD and cannabis that I've been trying to publish for over a year has finally been accepted.
All right.
The bottom line is that cannabis is really good for symptoms of intrusion and hyperarousal, so the kind of things where a memory seems like it's jumping right into your head that folks with PTSD report, and that hyperarousal, that notion of I'm completely amped up and I'm really vigilant, constantly looking for the danger, and folks report less of a support for cannabis on things like emotional numbing or the avoidance of certain activities or places. But this is pretty much what you'd expect, and I sure hope that data like these will help friends in Colorado and Washington make the case for studying cannabis as a good treatment for PTSD.
Yeah, and speaking of post-traumatic stress, I found myself in a very traumatic and stressful situation the other day. George W. Bush, the former president, came out for changing the name of post-traumatic stress disorder and taking the D off it, taking the disorder off it. And doctor, I'm extremely stressed for having to agree with George W. Bush on anything.
I have to confess, it's not often this happens, but I have to say, George W. Bush has a point. When you look at some of the taxonomic work on this, post-traumatic stress really does have kind of a continuous component to it. And anybody who's had a car accident and then driven by that same spot again, even if you're not completely debilitated, there is some of that hyperarousal that's sort of left over. And I think this notion of thinking about it as not a categorical disorder, but as something that's on a continuum, could be a big help to a lot of folks.
Yeah, I always kind of thought of it as, you know, how can you call it a disorder when the brain is reacting to such trauma in a way that's trying to protect itself? Isn't that the reason why that happens?
I mean, I think part of that label was a hope to make it more credible to military folks who had been accustomed to calling it shell shock and had, you know, turned it into this thing that they thought was really just kind of a malingering issue where folks were making up symptoms that weren't very real. And so I think what was originally a good-intentioned effort had turned into something that kind of backfired.
You know, speaking of that, this idea of trying to label it as something to get people to buy into the disease model. That's something we find with addiction and with substance use as well, as this idea of addiction as a disease model. Do you find that to be an accurate description, or does it hinder some of our drug policy discussions?
It's another one where historically it sort of had an advantage, but then it kind of flung back on itself. So before there was the disease model, we had these kind of oddball moral models where everything that was a source of addiction was either Satan or some kind of moral weakness. And then the only cure was to go to church or something. And so clearly that was awry. And the hope was that the disease model would make this into something where people weren't so culpable, because in fact it was a combination of inherited reactivity to drugs and a whole bunch of environmental contributors. The problem was 12-step traditions and things like that were kind of misinterpreted, and then suddenly it became this disease like anthrax or something where you were going to breathe something in and totally get it. And of course that messed up the treatment models, got people to develop these rather myopic views of how treatment was supposed to work, and it just really went awry. So I'm all for thinking of this as more as a set of learned behaviors that have sort of gotten maladaptive over the years that respond to conditioning and, you know, cognitive restructuring in a way that would make maladaptive drug use become less problematic simply by learning.
So is there such a thing as a genetic predisposition to addiction? You know, some people will say, you know, I'm just an addictive personality. I would have gotten addicted to anything. Is there something to that?
We tend to see a subset of folks who are more extroverted and more sensation-seeking, who are more likely to use drugs and run into problems with them. But that's not what I think people really mean when they say that. So I can't really get behind that. And we definitely see that some of these disorders run in families. So when you adopt away twins or look at the children of sons of alcoholic fathers, for example, you really do seem to inherit a reactivity to the drug. So sons of alcoholic fathers seem to be more sensitive to some of the positive effects of alcohol and less sensitive to some of the negative effects. And you could see how that alone isn't going to translate into alcoholism, but that in combination with no educational buffers, poor employment opportunities and things like that might send somebody awry. And particularly with trauma, to get back to that, with some kind of stressful single event or some comorbid depression or anxiety disorder or things like that, then yeah, of course it could happen. But the idea that it's just you've got this one gene and bam, you're an alcoholic, of course that doesn't seem to fit the data.
All right. We've got some questions coming in from our chat room now. John Thomas would like to know, he states that marijuana smoke can cause bronchitis. We'll get your opinion on that. But he really wants to know, can vaporization cause any negative effects to the lungs?
Well, so far we do see a subset of folks who smoke a lot of cannabis do report more of the sort of coughing and wheezing and tightness in the chest that we associate with symptoms of bronchitis. The only vaporizer data I have are large surveys of mine and stuff that we've done in the lab where folks who have these symptoms come, get a vaporizer for a month, and then come back, and we aren't seeing any negative consequences from the vaporizer. The only way it tends to go awry is when people get those ones that have the potentiometers on there and they sort of turn them up too high and they're just turning them into a big smoke machine. But otherwise, no, that doesn't seem to be an issue as long as folks are vaporizing at an appropriate temperature.
Okay. Randy Brush would like to know about the interactions of cannabis and caffeine.
It's funny because there are very few data on this, and that is probably one of the most popular combinations. And it's probably strain specific. We are seeing, cannabis-related increases in heart rate and caffeine-related increases in heart rate. And so whether those potentiate in combination hasn't been investigated in the lab, but it's one of those things that I think may be behind all these scares about the cardiovascular risks of cannabis. But unfortunately, we just can't seem to get the funding to really do this the way it ought to be done. And then a lot of folks swear by a sativa and a coffee in the morning just to get them through the day. But I think the better thing to do might be to have an indica at night and actually get a little more sleep. Mm.
Coffee and weed, or as Rob Cantrell calls it, the hippie speedball. All right, let's get to another question here. There was a study that came out on February 25th in the International Journal of Drug Policy, and it states that about 10% of high school students who would be low risk for pot smoking would smoke pot if it were legal. They say this is a shift of 5.6% absolute increase in lifetime pot use for high school seniors alone, saying that would raise the lifetime use from 45.6 to over 50%. Had you seen that study? What do you think of that data, and what can we make of it?
I've only seen the abstract, and it pretty much says exactly what you just said. But I think the missing link here is, would these folks become regular cannabis users, or would they simply be more likely to initiate and try one time? And when you think about, well, yeah, about half of the United States of a certain age group have definitely tried cannabis, but that doesn't mean they're regular users. We're talking, you know, 10 to 12% of folks seem to use more regularly. So if a small increase in trying is really what's going to happen here, then a small subset of those would become regular users. And then I feel like the tacit assumption is, that's such a terrible thing. And I just don't really feel like the negative consequences of even being a regular user are very substantial. So why would a small increase in the number of people who tried it once be a big issue?
Mm. As I like to say, you know, we can't take that stat in a vacuum either. I mean, how many kids are switching out pot smoking for keg stands or something more risky?
I mean, the RAND data that just came out today saying cocaine is down and pot is up, and I'm supposed to be upset about that. I mean, come on.
Exactly. And speaking of adolescents, high school kids, you know, the oft-repeated scare line from the anti-pot crusaders these days is 1 out of 6 kids that try pot is going to become addicted. Can you give us the thorough debunk of that?
Wow, I mean, it's just not consistent with the data that we have. Certainly, the younger you start, the more likely you are to become a problematic user, but the base rate is more in that 1 in 9 through 1 in 12, and it just doesn't really have a ton of empirical support to say that that's going to be as big a number. And then, again, the cannabis dependence, it's like heroin or something like that. I mean, what are the real symptoms of that? If you don't have cannabis, you crave it. And if you don't have it, you lose some appetite. I can't get too worked up over those negative consequences. I do want to make sure that folks in high school really get a high school education. And unfortunately, when you're sitting in the classroom high, you just can't seem to get that hippocampus to fire up and make those new memories like you could without it. And I think the real recommendation here, if people care about kids so much, is to let's make high schools well-funded and good, and suddenly people will actually want to go there and learn stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I would tell kids, too, that, you know, those young years, your power to learn new things is so much greater than it is when you're a middle-aged guy like me. You know, take every advantage you can of how powerful your brain is at that time of life, and save the getting high for when things are really stressful. You know, when you're an adult. All right. One last question we have here from JohnDog76. He just wants to know, what temperature should we be using to vaporize cannabis?
I mean, unfortunately, each of the thermometers that comes with the gizmos can be a little bit miscalibrated. So I think the thing to look for is, if you have one of those whips or one of those tubes, you really shouldn't see anything coming in on the inhalation. And then when you blow out, there should just be a very fine sort of bluish mist. You should never actually see smoke. And then when you're done, look at your cannabis. And if any of it is black or dark brown, odds are high that was too high. And then if it has just turned kind of a light brown, as hard as it is to throw that away, odds are high the trichromes have burst and you've released the THC appropriately without necessarily making yourself subject to any kind of respiratory irritants.
Is there anything that's going to degrade the cannabis sample if you're vaporizing at too low a temperature? And with that in mind, could you start too low and work yourself up until you find the number you're looking for?
I mean, I think that's pretty adaptive. The complaint that most folks have is that the onset is not as immediate as it is when you're using a fire and actually lighting it up. So we actually see cannabis responses after 15 seconds for folks who are smoking. It's more like 10 minutes for folks who are vaporizing. And I, you know, do get the occasional sad story, oh, I bought a vaporizer, it seemed like nothing was happening, and the next thing I know, I was on the dark side of the moon. So definitely give yourself time in between hits as you experiment with that temperature.
All right, and we've got a caller joining us here, so I'm going to hold off the end theme there for just a second because we got a live caller on the air with a question. Caller, go ahead.
Hey, guys, great show today. I got a question for you, Dr. Mitch. I just recently had a glioblastoma milliforma brain tumor removed from my head. And I was wondering if you could give me an idea of who online, just, you know, referential, might be working with cannabis recently.
Oh, it's interesting because the brain tumor, I mean, literature is so behind what's going on with cannabis that there isn't a researcher who's sort of known for this idea. But if you want to email me at the regular address, I will find all I can for it.
I certainly will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And the email address is 420research@gmail.com. And that's for everyone out there. If you didn't get a chance to get your question in today, just send an email to Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com, or you can use our contact form at 420 Radio. Dr. Mitch joins us every Monday for Cannabis Science. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitch, for making yourself available.
Have a great week.
All right. When we come up, we're going to take a look at, we're going to take a look at Washington's medical marijuana mess and why legalization is not to blame. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
The judge allows in evidence that Trayvon Martin did have marijuana in his system at the time he died. What difference, if any, does that make?
It's because I've seen too many felonies, and I don't mean pot sales or growing pot like this guy up in Connecticut.
To me, it means that he is less likely to pick a fight with someone.
I mean, people on pot shoot each other.
Isn't it true that when you smoke pot, you just want to lay on the sofa and eat?
People on pot kill families, wipe out a whole family.
The common connotation pot goes with lethargy, with the munchies, with wanting to eat, with being laid back, not with chasing somebody down, jumping out from behind bushes, beating them in the head till they're pulpy, and basically starting mortal combat. That's not what you typically equate with smoking a doobie.
I've got to be drinking booze, or I've got to be smoking, or I've got to be hot.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint can? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it. Lie to don't hide it.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Legalization is not to blame for Washington's medical marijuana mess. Lately, medical marijuana in Washington State has been under attack from legislators who wish to seriously reduce the limits and availability of medicine for patients. The rollout of recreational legalization in the state has subjected patients to much worry. However, I do not accept the pity party going on in Washington State, complaining that legalization has gutted medical marijuana. No, medical marijuana activists in Washington are to blame here for what's happening with medical marijuana. See, the leaders in Washington's marijuana movement were more than happy to endorse and even encourage the Wild West atmosphere there, beginning with the vague 60-day supply written in the law, rather than any fixed limits, knowing that in pot-friendly areas, 60-day supply would be a whole lot of marijuana. You know, for patients, of course. Nobody would ever overgrow and distribute their Washington weed in, say, you know, Chicago, where they can make huge profits. Why, that would give a black eye to medical marijuana and might convince legislators it's out of control. Then, as their dispensaries, and I should put dispensaries, began to flourish, did their activists work hard to put a dispensary regulation initiative on the ballot like we did in Oregon in 2004 and try again but fail to make the ballot in 2008 and try again in 2010? Nope. They were more than willing to exploit the "we're not dispensaries, we're caregivers for one patient at one time" as they line up single file in front of our storefront counter. They were more than happy to exploit that loophole. And yeah, I know there was a lot of winking and nudging going on at Oregon dispensaries too, but at least we showed that we recognized it and we were willing to regulate it. And then they were busy convincing people that every single patient in Washington State was so seriously desperately ill that the 60-day supply had to be 35 ounces. In fact, my friend Dr. Sunil Agarwal, MD, suggested 71 ounces. Eventually, the legislature settled on 24 ounces, a pound and a half. And yes, some patients need that much. But if they'd have gone for, say, you know, 6 ounces, but a doctor can recommend more if needed, they would have secured some goodwill with the public and legislators. And yes, I know, here in Oregon, we've got 24 ounces too, but we traded that for an affirmative defense on amounts greater than 24 ounces. Again, showing that we wanted to work in good faith and build trust with the public and the legislators. Now, the dispensaries in Washington continued to develop, winking and nudging along the way. More years passed where activists could have worked on a dispensary initiative again, building up goodwill in the community and appearing as if they cared about keeping things regulated and benefiting the state. Nope, didn't do that either. Instead, they were focused on sensible Washington, the eminently insensible plan to ask voters to completely repeal and invalidate all marijuana laws and then leave it up to the legislature to come up with regulations. You know, that same legislature they're castigating now for destroying medical marijuana. Of course, this sensible Washington thing never had a shot at the ballot. It never got any serious institutional support, and it never got half as many signatures as it needed to make the ballot. And it never generated any serious funding in 2010. So they did it again in an off-year election in 2011 and got the same results. And once it became clear that the locals weren't operating in political reality, the big national money started looking for other legalization options. Now, meanwhile, the legislature finally got around to writing laws to regulate dispensaries, most of which brought howls from the activist community. They howled about finally getting protection from arrest because it would require a mandatory registry, like every other medical marijuana state except California. And they went so far to compare it to a sex offender registry. I don't know if they really intended to insult the residents of 18 states who signed up for their medical marijuana registry by comparing them to pedophiles, but you know, that's the way they roll there in Washington State. Everything's a mountain out of a molehill. And what they're proposing in this new bill, as far as a mandatory registry goes, wouldn't contain any patient identifying information that law enforcement could get their hands on. Right? It would be the most secure, most private, most well-protected medical marijuana registry in the country. But they want to destroy the bill because, oh my God, it's we'll be on a list. Folks, you've been put on 6 lists from the NSA scouring 8 terabytes of data in the time it's taken me to talk to you this hour. Forget about, I don't want to be on a list. You're on a list. They also howled that the one patient at one time loophole was being closed. And again, this always bothers me because, you know, this is supposed to be under the guise of being a caregiver. And I know caregivers. I know people that work as certified nursing assistants who, you know, help feed people, who help clothe people, bathe people, wipe their ass. That's caregiving. Opening up a storefront, making prohibition profits, dealing weed one patient at one time is not caregiving. They've also howled about the 60-day super allowance being gone in favor of a mere 15 plants. That's right. When the legislature was going to try to change 60 days to being 15 plants, they howled about that. That wasn't going to be enough, even though it was more than any other state's limit except for California. They howled about no longer being able to backdate recommendations. You know, fraud. Like you're busted for, you know, you got marijuana, you get arrested by the cops, you're growing, you get arrested by the cops. Then you go to a medical marijuana doctor and have him write you a recommendation for 2 months ago. Gosh, wouldn't that be great if that worked with car insurance? They howled about, so all of this was part of the bill that was trying to get passed through the legislature. And they howled about the stuff that passed. And then the stuff that didn't pass was the dispensary regulations. That got line item vetoed by Chris Gregoire, the governor at the time, who was scared by the U.S. attorney, Jenny Durkin. So why are they pissed about I-502 when it was Gregoire and Durkin who prevented you from having any regulation of dispensaries? And if you'd had dispensary regulations, maybe you wouldn't be in this situation. Why is it legalization's fault? Why is it not Gregoire's and Durkin's fault? But when they did pass that bill, that SB 5073, it did contain a new loophole, collective gardens. 10 patients could collectively garden 45 plants. So now the one patient at one time caregiver dispensaries became one patient at a time joins my 10 person collective as I kick the 10th person off the list dispensaries. Another loophole. Also, we made it easier to get recommendations with the addition of naturopaths and DOs and nurse practitioners, leading to the infamous doc in a tent at HempFest and the line of 20-somethings with such serious and debilitating illnesses they need a pound and a half of cannabis before they join the mosh pit at center stage. So in this vacuum of any serious mature attempts to legalize marijuana or regulate medical marijuana, in steps New Approach Washington with I-502. A marijuana legalization law written by an alcohol drinker with a bartender boyfriend regulated by a liquor control board. Now, I was working with Normal at the time. This was cranking up, and we pushed hard for no per se DUID. We pushed hard for letting them allow home grow, and we pushed hard for the consideration and protection of medical marijuana. But the wink-nudge distrust of the marijuana movement there made it tough for us to get any political traction. Major funders and high-profile backers wouldn't join without the per se DUID. Home Grow was shot down because the polling showed it cost points, and I think that's a public reaction to the massive medical grows that were leading to diversion out of state. And the activists in Washington insisted quite strongly that any legalization measure doesn't touch medical, which I-502 did not. You can't find a single line in I-502 that changes, or for that matter, protects the medical law. So here they are, watching their medical marijuana program being reduced down to the levels of, say, you know, Hawaii, Maine, or Colorado, wailing about taxes most patients in most states would love to have the opportunity to pay, wailing about a mere 6 plants and 3 ounces, and heaping all their opprobrium on legalization of marijuana through I-502. Because that's a whole lot easier than admitting their failure to lead, failure to make reasonable political compromises. I mean, really, opposing a registry, really? Failure to build working relationships with national-level, well-funded marijuana lobbies, and failure to address the obvious, glaring subterfuge of the medical marijuana law. I often wonder, what did these guys think was going to happen if I-502 didn't pass? The wink-nudge dispensaries would have just hummed along? I seriously doubt it. With a legalization defeat, there would have been more political will to clamp down on this wink-nudge loophole stuff. And what, thousands more recreational users like me had to get a misdemeanor and a mandatory 24-hour jail stint every year, year after year, until finally, after already 14 years, medical marijuana got its shit together? Basically, their complaint is that tightly regulated recreational marijuana exposed their unregulated loophole medical marijuana, and we should have kept marijuana criminal so they could keep exploiting loopholes. And meanwhile, I feel bad for the real patients in Washington State who are let down by this shoddy leadership. That's all the time we got for today, but if you don't like what I had to say, join me for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Call in live and chew me out if you want. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.